I'm Maria with the Why, and welcome to Startup to Success, where I navigate through the whys behind entrepreneurship for anyone looking to start or scale their business.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success with Maria. Today, I have a very special guest, Rhonda Pittman, the founder and CEO of R&D Company Business Management, serving startups and small companies as a CFO and raising capital for a clientele of primarily creatives, women, people of color, and queer people. She also created courses that reach more people so we can shift the balance of power and money in our world through practical approaches, habits, and templates. Rhonda, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining. And you know, this is an entrepreneurship show, so I am going to ask you how you took the leap. If you can give me a brief background story on how you started an amazing company.
Of course. Well, it's been a journey for probably about 10 or 11 years. I left a, you know, I think what most people would define as a really good corporate job, or corporate-ish job, that was kind of brutal, to be honest, and I never really felt like I fit in. But I learned a ton from my experiences working for other people, particularly the last job that I had, which was working for a pretty big investment firm that was rapidly growing and scaling and went public after I left. So anyone who's had that experience going public or the preparation leading up to it knows, you know, that it's just around the clock work for everyone involved. And I just felt like there was an issue of like it didn't feel equitable to me, on top of the fact that I just didn't feel like it was an environment that I belonged in. And I had, you know, the right people around me. And I think I'd had examples throughout my life of entrepreneurship. And I think I'm a little bit of somebody who's always looking for freedom. And that's kind of one of my values around success. And so the stars just aligned really, really nicely for me. And I left my job and I kind of-ish took a year because again, the stars aligned and I was just provided for in such a great way to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And after about a year, I had my first client. I think it was like a year to the day almost, or the week. I took my first client on. And at that time I was doing more sort of operations work, but it's really just, it's been a long evolution since then to get to where I am now. So I don't know. I feel like I just kind of got pushed by the universe in a way.
Well, I'll tell you, as a CEO of RomaLeaf, which is a startup, you're solving a huge problem because we're still in our preliminary stages where we can't really afford to hire a full-time, not even a part-time CFO at the moment. So your company is really solving a huge problem. And what I would love to learn a little bit more is about that specifically.
Yeah.
You know, when just tell me about that service.
Well, you know, it's interesting that RomaLeaf is like so early stage, although you're not that busy. You've done some pretty amazing things. But I don't know, maybe it's just my network or the people that I know and the clients that I've worked with in the past. But one of the things that started happening is I started getting referred to people who are very early stage in their businesses, whether they were looking to raise capital because I build financial models. I'm such a weird nerd. I really want to understand the underlying economics and business model of like, how's the money going to work? How are you going to do this thing? I just have an inherent curiosity around it. So kind of works out for my clients. And then I also just manage like day-to-day finances. But because I come from sort of an operations and tech background and have that curiosity, I'm always looking at the big picture with my clients. When I sit down with them or I first have conversations with them, I really want to understand the entire world of their business so that if I'm focused on their finances, I can really sort of shape and craft it in a way that's going to serve them and what their sort of like short and medium term goals are. And we're planning for the future because I functionally, I really want everything to work for where they're headed, at least for some period of time. So I think there's like that kind of approach and really getting it. I always tell people, like, if you're not comfortable with me pulling out that junk drawer in your kitchen and dumping it on the floor, you don't want to work with me because that's what I'm going to do. And then I'm gonna put back together really nice and neat.
Well, I think anyone who has knowledge about finances would appreciate that. And I highly appreciate that. I would love for you to put it out and just help me. I know we've talked about this a while back ago when I first learned about your services, but in terms of raising capital, I really want to talk about that a little bit, because my plan was to start looking into potentially raising capital for Romaleaf this summer, but my pregnancy sort of changed my plans, and I'm putting it on hold until October, and hopefully I can pick things up then. But if I were to come to you and say, all right, end of the year, I want to start thinking about pitching to VCs and start raising capital, how long, what would be the time frame that you would need to help me prep for everything?
Well, first and foremost, it depends on what you have and what you already know. So one of the things that, you already know this, but well, for the audience listening, it's really easy at the early part of the business to put together the expense side of your business. So I always tell people, put together like your staffing costs and how you think your staffing needs to grow over some period of time, and definitely at least 18 months to the best of your ability. And then what are your just general operating costs for your business and overhead? Put that together. These are all like separate, distinct items, so don't just like clump them together. And then if you have an expense that goes along with like a product that you sell, so service business don't have this, but like with Romaleaf, for instance, you do. So you have, packaging and you have product that you put inside there. So you're gonna have to spend some amount of money on a cost of goods sold. So to the best of someone's ability, I say provide all of the information you can about that, what you're gonna sell it at, what your markup will be and things like that. And then I wanna sit down with people, I wanna like kind of mine through that information, formulate my questions, and then ask them about what's their business model. How are they planning to do this? How are they planning to like scale it and market it? And so that I can understand what their story needs to be in a mathematical sense, because I think models can really tell a beautiful story over a period of time. And that's probably where I would start. And so if you had a lot of that ready for me and you were willing to do some work sessions with me where I could just, annihilate you with a lot of questions that hopefully you know the answer to or you have a sense of. I usually tell people that it can take as little as 8 weeks. I literally just finished a model. I did it in about 6 weeks for a client of mine. We're raising a
project. Wow. That's pretty quick. That's quick, 6 weeks.
Well, to be fair, I am their CFO and I manage a lot of their day-to-day finances, and I've been with them for a while, so I know the business pretty much inside and out. So I just took an operating business and built a model for it, but it took me that long. And people would be like, that's a long time. That's actually lightning fast. So I think like a fair like estimate is probably 2 months to 4 months.
Okay.
Because people are operating businesses and you're running around and doing stuff, and you have to gather information or data that you may not have readily accessible. You may have to go somewhere and request it. Like if you're building something, you've got to get some sense of construction costs, for instance, or you want to find out about commercial real estate, so on and so forth. That can also delay things just to get really good information to build out a smart business. And then I think it's an iterative process. So we may get to a version that we really like, but when we start shopping it around or showing it to people, they may give us feedback where we go, oh, we need to adjust something here.
Got it. And if just to confirm, when you're helping and providing this sort of service and prepping our financials for a pitch, can you give me a little overview of what type of documents you prepare? Is it like the 3 to 5 year plan or?
Yeah, totally. I think most of the time it's a minimum of 3 years. I have done some things for like investors that are sort of already involved with people where it was like 12 or 18 months, but those were like really quick kind of, we just need to inject some capital into the business. But yeah, in general, as a rule, it's gotta be 36 to 60 months. And I think that like what really, you may not know what the business is going to look like in 3 years or 5 years, but I think that investors from their perspective want to see the strategies that you're applying, and they want to kind of, it's an expression of like what your plans are and the steps that you're going to take to get to where you say you want to go. Whether that actually happens or not, that's a different story.
That answers my question, and it kind of leads me to the next question. In terms of figuring out how much equity to give to investors and all of that stuff, like I'm lost. I've tried reading books and tried to figure out what and how I should approach this. Is that something you can also consult and help with?
I have really passionate and strong opinions about it. But I don't know that I'm right. I don't think I'm wrong, of course, because those are my opinions. But I'll tell you what I do think. I, as a general rule, I do not like the idea of an early stage company taking on investment for equity. I think it's not a great move because we get into something called pricing. And pricing just sounds like, oh, there's a price on a thing and I don't cost this. But in fact, what you've done by doing that is you've said, oh, I'll take, let's say you take $1 million from someone for 10% of your business. You just price the business at 10 million. But you may not have been in business long enough or active long enough to actually have a valuation. So that price is the valuation. So you just set, you did a, now we call it a price round, right? That's like the terminology. And so by setting the price of your business, you've kind of backed yourself into a weird place going forward, because now you're going to have to like perform against that. Whereas if you take it on debt, which is my preference, people are so like weirded out and get uncomfortable with debt. But in the context of a startup or an early stage business, really, it should be convertible debt. Some people like to use an instrument called a SAFE, which is essentially a convertible debt. It just has a different name and like some other different parameters. But that said, that puts like limits on it. So like, I'll take your money and I'll guarantee you some kind of return. And we'll say that the business is gonna, like, we'll put a cap on what the valuation can be. But because we haven't been in business long enough to say what the value of our business is, we're going to take this on as debt, as convertible debt. So there may be an event in the future, let's call it a triggering event. That could be someone wants to buy your business. That could be you want to raise another round of capital. That could also just be the maturity date of that convertible note. And at that moment, you could go back to your investors, probably before, but you could go back to them and say, we cannot pay you this note back. Do you want to convert to equity, or can we continue to hold this note? You may also be raising a round of capital, in which case you would have to ask them, do you want to stay invested in this? But now we're going to dilute you in terms of your possible equity in this business. It's kind of, it gets into some like really tricky stuff and like math that's a little bit complicated for people, but all in all, it's like fairly straightforward. That you're going to let, with a new investor, you're going to let someone new in the door. And so you got to like, everyone gets squeezed a little, including ownership. So I think that's better because you never have to price the business really, really early because you just don't know. You could have a business on your hands worth $100 million and you just let someone own 10% of it for $1 million. I mean, maybe you really, really needed that $1 million, but I'm willing to wager that you probably could have gotten someone to give you $1 million as convertible debt if you just kind of like hung in there and you had a really smart pitch and a smart business model to back all of it up.
Wow, I love that. I think I'm probably going to take that approach.
Call me later.
I mean, you just solved my problem in a matter of 2 minutes, literally. Okay, I'm not going to read the books anymore. I'm just gonna, and I think that was my biggest challenge, just putting the pressure of evaluating my business. I feel like it's still somewhat fairly new. We just opened the retail store. I don't have enough data to be able to go back and say, well, I project in 2 years, we're going to generate this much money. I can't project that yet. I haven't really done enough marketing and promotion to be able to know what my cost per acquisition is. Online and offline work so differently. it's really hard for me to take the data and my metrics and transition that into projecting the offline sales. It's just impossible. So I have to give the offline, sales a chance or a time to gather the metrics and then be able to assess. And so I rather kind of stay away from all that because it's a lot of work and a lot of projections. And ultimately it's going to be BS. If we're not looking at real numbers, then we're really coming up with stuff as we go. And I don't want to do that because I don't want the pressure. So thank you. I think you just solved a huge problem of mine. Is there anything else that you want to share about being the CFO, offering this amazing service as a CFO to startups and small to medium sized companies?
Yeah, I think that I think that there's a really cool element to it that I really enjoy, which is, I get to develop amazing relationships with business owners or founders. So I have one client that has four founders and I've developed unique relationships with all of them. I do not work intimately with all of them. I work more intimately with one, and then I have relationships with a couple of the others because I have sort of ongoing work with them. But I think for my clients, they end up with another business partner or a partner in their process. So I have other clients where it's just one business owner and I work with them, or they're the CEO and I work really closely with them. And I kind of jokingly call it that I'm like a business partner for hire, because I think it's also a personality thing where I come in and I'm like, listen, I'm going to shoot really straight with you. There's no BS. This is, what I think we should do. Or I ask questions. I want to understand and learn so I can best support my clients. But they end up with, I think, a powerful ally and someone who will challenge them, which is a cool dynamic. And I think sometimes people think that they have to hire someone to work for them inside of their company as an employee. And I think that the dynamic shifts when I come in more in a consulting role, but an ongoing consulting role, because we have this sort of peer-to-peer relationship and not this subordinate superior thing. And I just think that I see my clients really flourish as just a byproduct of, my business. And so I think that's, it's just a really cool thing. And I enjoy it a lot too.
I do have to agree to that, especially I think, I've been thinking a lot about this, where if I'm pitching to VCs and I have someone, whether it's my accountant or CFO in-house, who doesn't have much experience with investors and so on, are they going to really give me the information that is needed for me to prepare myself as best as I could? And I feel like your experience, especially with your previous work, it's just so valuable, where you can come in from an outside and look at the entire picture from an outside perspective and be able to almost assess things from an investor's point of view, rather than just someone who is working for Maria and I'm obligated to project and make the numbers look great. But and that's what I don't want. I want to be able to really solidify the business model and make sure that the numbers make sense. I don't want to take people's money and not be able to pay them back. I want to succeed. And if there are certain flaws in my numbers or my finances or whatever, or certain channels aren't profitable, then I rather cut and fix the problem before I even go to the investors. I know the wholesale side of our business, I'm not too happy about it. My margins are not healthy, like most businesses, right? Obviously retail is different, wholesale is different, but I would love a professional, I would love your thoughts on it before I decide to put a pause on the entire wholesale side of our business. I don't want to just make that judgment, because maybe all I need to do is increase the quantity of the products that I'm producing so that I'm cutting the cost, and then maybe the margins could make sense if I'm scaling and taking on.
Or you increase your limit on order sizes.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are ways to tweak. And I feel like there are certain things that I just can't make these strategic decisions without having a professional come in and look at things. And that's where I'm at, where now I'm at a point where I'm trying to really optimize my business model. and get it ready to not just scale, but also take, well, in order to scale, I need the investment so that I can scale. But in order to get the investment, I need to make sure everything's in order. And so I love your service. I love your experience. I love all the knowledge. And I can't wait to personally start working with you. But I am super excited about the money magic that you've created. I'm sorry. I want to jump into that a little bit. Because
I'll talk about money magic.
Yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people too, it doesn't, it's just, you don't have to be a startup where, or a small business where you're established, or, tell me a little bit about, I'll let you sort of talk about what it is and who it would be ideal for.
So, I mean, ultimately this is my, I've just created a new set of courses. It's one class course of like six classes, and they all happen sequentially. And they're really for like entrepreneurs. So yes, you could be at any stage in your business. You may be frustrated with where you are. You may feel like in your role as a leadership that you're not getting answers that you want from like your staff, or if you've hired someone externally to do like your bookkeeping and finance, is kind of similar to what I do, but you don't know what to ask them for. I cover a lot of that stuff. So my sort of thinking about it was, I want to reach more people. I know that people need this. Maybe people can't afford to work directly with me because it's not cheap, right? I really value my time. And so I wanted to put something out there that would give people, I could talk to them about their habits, their communication about money, their own belief systems about money, because we actually have to acknowledge that and get into that if we want to create more money and more revenue from our businesses. So we just have to deal with ourselves because we are the only thing in our way. So it gets a little woo-woo, but we have to. And then from there, I kind of start building and developing, like I call it like working out your money muscles, to give people some new habits and skills to practice. And I like that it's 6 weeks because I didn't want to do a thing where I had like a money retreat for 2 days. I wanted to start creating habits and practices, and that takes a minimum of 3 weeks. So 6 weeks is a good period of time. And the thing that I give people over time, not only are like exercises and new ways to think about stuff, but I show them examples of how like something can work. And I give them examples of like budgets and monthly nets so they can manage not only their business finances, but their personal finances. And I give them templates, the ones that I use in my business and for myself, I give them those as downloadable tools. And so it's like, it's kind of amazing just that they can take this course. It's recorded. They can come back to it. I'm also doing an hour to an hour and a half of weekly office hours where people can call in and like ask all their crazy questions. Who knows what they are?
Just to confirm, that's part of the course. If they purchase the course,
that's part of the course.
That's amazing.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to see how it goes. And I will record all the office hours because I know, if people are chiming in from, all parts of the world, potentially, I want them to still have the value of those conversations. And then I also have like one-on-one, I think if you pay full price for the course, and if you register before a certain time, they get one-on-one call with me for 75 minutes. And that is like $400 value, just a one-on-one call, because I have a whole prep process before it that they fill out and send to me. So I spend time before I even get on the phone with them, understanding their business and their problems. And then we get on the phone and we can just get into like problem solving. So what I really want to do with this, with my work directly with clients or with my courses, is help people solve real problems that they're facing every day, see it from a new perspective. So they're not like, fear around money or trying to make changes around money is really isolating. I think that culturally we've just developed that. And I think that in order to kind of like lift the cover off of that. People just need to see examples and be told, it's okay, I'm going to help you with this. So I just want to be that resource for them to like demystify a bunch of funny language and words that they've never heard before. Be like, it's really basic stuff. And here's how you can work with it and apply it to your own business and your own life and start to feel really confident and like you have this thing on track and you're headed toward, you know, whatever your personal goal may be.
I love it. I love it. And speaking of money, I think, I don't know, I can't wait to take the course so I can learn more about it. But I personally did struggle with the way I viewed money. My parents lost money when we came from Armenia to US. And I remember as a child, I made money so not important in my life. And I grew up thinking money was always secondary to me. Although, you know, I'm ambitious and I want to have money so I can have all the wonderful things in life. But somehow it was so weird. Like I would prioritize it, but then deep inside, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't, I think it was probably about 5 years ago when I realized that unless I fix things within, I can't fix things on the outside, because all I found myself doing was helping others and having a hard time charging for my time and giving it value, and only because I didn't value money. So it really does work hand in hand. And it's just, you know, we just don't think about it until someone tells you and you're like, oh, wow, this is insane how.
Or we get like frustrated and we're like, you know, if I didn't charge enough money to my clients for how much time and effort I put into the work I do for them, then I wouldn't be able to support myself. Why would I build it that way? So I think also culturally we have this thing around, if you have a lot of money, you've done something terrible to get it, because the reality is there are some people that have done some terrible things to have a lot of money. They exist. That aside, there's nothing wrong with money. It's really just like, you know, it's like a scoreboard, if you will. It's like, oh, if I'm going to play this game, I want to win at it. So I think like a lot of the work that I do, sometimes I do refer to it as a scoreboard, and I just want to help people understand the game so they can play it and win. And they're not playing against anybody. So by virtue of, you know, making a lot of money, you haven't hurt someone else, because there's more than enough for all of us. And so like all the in my client work and in my coursework, those principles are always being reiterated, and just helping people to really look at it like it's a flow of energy. For the, like, money is really just a byproduct of the work that, or the work or the effort or the energy that we put out into the world. And it comes back to us in that way sometimes. It comes back to us in other ways, but if we want it to, we can sort of have an unlimited amount flow back to us.
Right. But it also goes back to, when you prioritize money, then your business model can be built properly.
Yes.
I've seen businesses where they seemed to be so successful, busy, and then when the time came, and as a marketer, I never dove into their financials, but I did have to look at a few documents to figure out what their cost per acquisition would be in order to build a marketing campaign around it. And I realized that they're not making money, they're bleeding money. And I was just like, well, why wouldn't you prioritize this and look at your business model and make sure that you're profitable? They just don't care. They're like,
they just not know.
They just literally, I'm successful. I've got all these customers, but then you're paying all these people and so on. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting how people just continue going that route without prioritizing, whether it's viewing their financials on a monthly basis or simply having a system in place where they can look at reports and their P&Ls and all of that. And I think that's another issue that I would love to bring up and talk about: profit and loss statements. You know, a lot of small businesses use QuickBooks. I myself use it too. And I do like it because I can pull reports as often as I like. But the challenge that I have is making time to look at those reports on a monthly basis. And I know they're instrumental, I need to do it and I need to figure out how to optimize my business, but I really have a hard time making that a priority in my day to day. So what would you suggest for people like me to do so that we don't put this on the back burner and just review it every 3 months?
Yeah. So that's, I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually a really important thing. Like having your QuickBooks or whatever your accounting system in order, and it's really, really critical. That has to be getting done. So if you're not doing it yourself and you're paying someone else to do it, you got to check in on them just to make sure that they're on top of it. And I think that, you know, anyone who deals with like accounting or bookkeeping knows that you have to tie the books out every month and you know, you reconcile the bank statements and you do all that and then look at your P&L. And I think that there are QuickBooks does run reports. QuickBooks spits out reports that nobody on earth wants to actually look at. I mean, I look at them, but then I think one of the other things you have to do is if you're hiring someone else to do this work for you, is you have to ask them to provide management reporting to you. That's like one of the things that I do for my clients, kind of is a big distinction between like just accounting and bookkeeping and actually like reporting in a at an executive level. So I take that data and I create a different, it's the same information. I just restate it in a more elegant way. I also create a cash flow statement. And so I use cash flow as a way to like actualize what's happened to date. And then based, because we know so many fixed costs, right? So most of our operating expenses are fixed. I project that out, you know, through like the year. So like for 2021, I've got that for all my clients projected out through December. And I think what that lets us do is that lets us see the known world that we have control over. And then when surprises pop up, because we know that they do, we can add those in or we can facilitate those as needed and plan accordingly. But we need to know, we need to have like a baseline for what we're going to spend, what our overhead is, and what we should be expecting, because we also need to be looking at pipeline business, what's coming in that's new, how we're marketing, and are we going to meet the revenue goals that we have so that we can cover all of our overhead and expenses. So I think most small business owners are not equipped to do that for themselves, and it is worth spending a little bit of money to have someone create a cash flow statement and put together a P&L in a slightly more beautiful format so that you can see the performance of the business. And it's actually something that you want to look at. I know that's not like a self-serve model, but you have to be intimate with those numbers. Otherwise, I don't know how you can set yourself up to make decisions. And ultimately, that's what that's about. Like, people get lost because they don't look at their numbers and they don't know what decisions to make next because they don't know what's going on with their money. And I think that's probably the biggest service that I provide is just like setting people up to make decisions.
That's awesome. Now, would that be part of your bookkeeping services?
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, like accounting, finance, bookkeeping, it's kind of all one. So it's like really expensive bookkeeping, but there's this executive reporting level kind of component and strategy built into it.
And would you say that if someone like me, for example, I'm eventually going to need consultation for my projections, my financial projections to prep all my finances for my investors, potential investors, would the bookkeeping really simplify that entire process if I were to work with you and use your bookkeeping services? And then will that make it easier?
And for a business that's already operating, we have a history that we can pull from. It's going to tell us a story up to, you know, the last month, let's say. And then we know based on, let's say if your business is seasonal, I know that your new shop probably has a lot of foot traffic. And so if the weather is really nice, it's always nice here, but you know, by our standards, if it's really nice, you might have higher sales or like holidays. Like you're going to start to know over time what those trends are. It's not really seasonal, but in some businesses it's very, very seasonal. And so I think once you start to tell that story, you can project out for the future. Oh, we know this happens. And then we're going to spend this on marketing and we're going to grow it like this. So yeah, I think absolutely got to have all that data.
I love it. I think your course is exciting. I can't wait to take it myself. I do need the money magic in my life. And yeah, we're going to have to talk. I need a lot of help financially. I think, you know, I do have an MBA, so I always lean on that and say, oh, I understand finance and I can read a P&L. I can analyze my cash flow. But making time for it is one thing. And then keeping up with the newer stuff and understanding what's important in my business is very different from the education that I've gotten 20 something years ago. So I almost feel like it's important for me to have it, but at the same time, I keep putting it secondary and I'm just like, I'll get to it. I don't need help, but I'm realizing I need more help than I thought I need, because I need somebody to hold me accountable to make sure that I'm looking at my finances on a monthly basis. But I also need to optimize the business. I think in any new business, whether it's a startup that's being built from scratch or like mine, which is almost a year and a few months old, I haven't sat down to really figure out how to optimize my business. And I've been putting it on hold and saying, I'll do it when I have to put my pitch and my presentation together for the VCs, but then it's going to be too late. I'm not going to be able to fix anything before then.
There's always time. I think it's just a matter of kind of like you're acknowledging something that's very true for so many people. You know, I do this for other people. I don't do it for myself as well as I do it for everyone else. I do it though. But like, you know, it's not the thing that you want to do. It's not the thing that you're good at. And so really, if you're at a place where your business is successful enough, financially, you're stable enough that you can have someone come in and help you, I encourage anyone to do it, because you really, like, as a business owner, as somebody who's driving a business forward, the idea is to allow you to be able to do the thing that you do extraordinarily well. And then, you know, I come in, or someone who does something similar to me comes in and they do this thing and they do it extraordinarily well. And then you come together and just really try to make your business better and help you thrive. And that's really the ultimate goal.
And if I were to, let's say as an example, right now I have someone who's helping me part-time with my books and everything. And if I wanted to make sure that she's doing her job properly, and I brought you on board to help me as a, I guess, CFO, right? Yeah. Make sure everything's going smoothly, it's set up properly. And then slowly transition into putting all the financials together for my big, hopefully successful pitch. Would that also be an option? Is that something
Absolutely.
That you can work with? Are you flexible to work with different ways? Because if I'm just thinking, if a business can't afford to hire you for bookkeeping, for example, but can you come on board, not just to help with the VC pitches and the financial projections, but also make sure everything's kind of clean and set up properly so that we're okay. Awesome.
Totally. Yeah, actually that's like a great thing. Nobody's asked me to do that, but I think that would be awesome for me, because truthfully, I do have people that, like, someone helps me here and there with my stuff, but to have someone do a lot of that work and then just kind of review it and see, like, are we optimizing on a sort of accounting side how we're tracking the business, and are we capturing the data and, like, sort of classifying transactions in a way that's going to give you information that will translate into all of your unique lines of business, let's say, how you're spending, instead of just putting all of your marketing dollars into one marketing bucket, do we want to break them up and say, like, oh, we're spending this on social marketing, we're spending this on, like, billboards, you know, because we want to see the return on those things.
And that's the biggest area that I'm having trouble with when I review my financials. I feel like my marketing spend is all bucketed under one umbrella, and I'm not able to tie ROI with social media marketing or influencer marketing. And I'm just like, oh, this is, and I've told my bookkeeper to categorize it, but I don't think she really knows or understands how to properly do it. And so I'm just like, I need more data from the marketer's perspective, but then I don't know, am I going to mess up my financials if I'm dissecting it too much or creating all these subcategories, you know? So, yeah. So I could use that second opinion of somebody coming in and saying, hey, this is how you should do it. Or even, you know, with production, there's just so many things that need to be classified properly. And if they're not, then I really don't know what my margins are, especially when selling through different channels. So I feel like there are just so many issues within just the way we're doing our bookkeeping that I need to clean house and just clean up and make sure it's structured properly. Because as a startup in the beginning, we it was the MVP, right? The minimum viable product. You just get it out there. My priority was to get the product to sell and to make sure I'm having recurring customers before I invest so much money into all the other departments. But now I hope I'm not too late to want to fix this, but now I'm like, all right, so we've got traction, we've got customers, the product is selling, but it's a mess. I don't know where to start from. I don't know what's working, what's not. I don't have enough data. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love these fun problems. I'm just like, I don't know why. Just like, what's really happening under here? What are all the little pieces? But I think you bring up a really great point. Like, people look at their businesses. I kind of have this generic approach to business where I'm like, well, business is business is business. It's all the same. It is and it's not, because we have no idea, like, the intricate levels of, like you're mentioning, if you sell wholesale, your cost structure may be totally different because you're maybe not labeling it, or some, you know, if you're doing like a white label, you may have different packaging and it's cheaper than when you sell it with your own labels, just as an example. Or I don't know if you guys do that, so I'm not saying you do, but you know, I have other clients that have like multiple sort of lines of business, and they're like entirely different businesses in and of them, each one of them in and of themselves, like four or five lines of business, and it's like little mini businesses, and we gotta like break them out and think about them as totally separate things.
And that's what I was going to ask, because now that we have the retail store, I can't treat the retail store the same way I'm treating my online store or my wholesale store. So I almost feel like I need they need to be treated completely different, like smaller sub businesses within a big business, for it to be evaluated properly, because you know, the expenses that go into the retail store they should not be tied to the overall business. Otherwise, how else would I know if the retail store is being profitable if I put it under the umbrella of all of my other fixed costs? I mean, overall, I want to have an overview of what my overall business costs are. Sure. But then when there are three different buckets, I've got the online, I've got the wholesale, and then I've got the retail. At the moment, I'm not able to go into my financials and be able to look at them separately and see which one's more profitable so that I can put more energy into the profitable bucket.
Right.
And that's where my biggest challenge is. And I know I need to solve it. I just, it's a little, not a little, it's way more advanced than I can understand and figure out a solution. So this is, I think I'm excited that you solved this problem, because it's a huge problem of mine. And it's been on my mind for the last month and a half to figure out a solution. And I feel like God brought you here, and I'm so excited, the universe and God. And yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and your time so much, Rhonda. And before we end, I do want to ask how people can get a hold of you, where we can get in touch with you.
So my website is rhondapittman.com. And I know you'll probably link it on your site and however people see or listen to this. It's just rhondapittman.com. My Money Magic courses are linked there, and to have a How to Work with Me page. and I do one-on-one consulting, and I'm coming up with like new ways to service people because I'm one person, I only have so much capacity, but I really feel like the work that I do and sort of the mission that I'm on is really important, and I want to like liberate as many people as I can and have people feel like confident and, you know, like have freedom at their fingertips around money. So yeah, check it out. I'd love to meet more people and hear what they're trying to do in the world.
Thank you. Thank you. You're solving such a huge problem. I think without having our finances in place, we can't continue growing and we can't really be successful. So thank you. Have a wonderful day. And thank you all for listening. Startup to Success. Please follow Rhonda Pittman. We will have a link to her website where you can take her Money Magic with Rhonda course and obviously reach out to her for any additional services. I know I will be reaching out to her right after this call. Thank you, Rhonda. Have a good one.
Thanks, Maria.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please comment, like, and share. Want to reach us? Connect on social media at Maria with the Y.